Chapter 13. This is the story of the treasure box. All that remains now is to conclude the story of Tom Chist, and to tell of what came of him in the end. He did not go back again, to live with old Matt Abrahamson. Parson Jones had now taken charge of him and his fortunes, and Tom did not have to go back to the fisherman's hut. Old Abrahamson talked a great deal about it, and would come in his cups and harangued Parson Jones, making a vast protestation of what he would do to Tom, if he ever caught him, for running away. But Tom on all these occasions kept carefully out of his way, and nothing came of the old man's threatenings. Tom used to go over to see his foster mother now and then, but always when the old man was from home. And Molly Abrahamson used to warn him to keep out of her father's way. "He's in as vile a humor as ever I see, Tom," she said. "He sits sulking all day long, and 'tis my belief he'd kill ye if he caught ye." Of course Tom said nothing, even to her, about the treasure, and he and the reverend gentleman kept the knowledge thereof to themselves. About 3 weeks later Parson Jones managed to get him shipped aboard of a vessel bound for New York town, and a few days later Tom Chist landed at that place. He had never been in such a town before, and he could not sufficiently wonder and marvel at the number of brick houses, at the multitude of people coming and going along the fine, hard, earthen sidewalk, at the shops and the stores, where goods hung in the windows, and, most of all, the fortifications and the battery at the point, at the rows of threatening cannon, and at the scarlet-coated sentries pacing up and down the ramparts. All this was very wonderful, and so were the clustered boats riding at anchor in the harbor. It was like a new world, so different was it from the sand hills and the sedgy levels of Henlopen. Tom Chist took up his lodgings at a coffee house near to the town hall, and thence he sent by the postboy a letter written by Parson Jones to Master Chillingsworth. In a little while the boy returned with a message, asking Tom to come up to Mr. Chillingsworth's house that afternoon at 2 o'clock. Tom went thither with a great deal of trepidation, and his heart fell away altogether when he found it a fine, grand brick house, 3 stories high, and with wrought iron letters across the front. The counting house was in the same building, but Tom, because of Mr. Jones' letter, was conducted directly into the parlor, where the great rich man was awaiting his coming. He was sitting in a leather-covered armchair, smoking a pipe of tobacco, and with a bottle of fine old Madeira close to his elbow. Tom had not had a chance to buy a new suit of clothes yet, and so he cut no very fine figure in the rough dress he had brought with him from Henlopen. Nor did Mr. Chillingsworth seem to think very highly of his appearance, for he sat looking sideways at Tom as he smoked. "Well, my lad," he said, "and what is this great thing you have to tell me that is so mightily wonderful? I got what's his name, Mr. Jones' letter, and now I am ready to hear what you have to say." But if he thought but little of his visitor's appearance at first, he soon changed his sentiments toward him, for Tom had not spoken 20 words, when Mr. Chillingsworth's whole aspect changed. He straightened himself up in his seat, laid aside his pipe, pushed away his glass of Madeira, and bade Tom take a chair. He listened without a word as Tom Chist told of the buried treasure, of how he had seen the poor negro murdered, and of how he and Parson Jones had recovered the chest again. Only once did Mr. Chillingsworth interrupt the narrative. "And to think," he cried, "that the villain this very day walks about New York town, as though he were an honest man, ruffling it with the best of us. But if we can only get hold of these logbooks you speak of." "Go on, tell me more of this." When Tom Chist's narrative was ended, Mr. Chillingsworth's bearing was as different as daylight is from dark. He asked 1,000 questions, all in the most polite and gracious tone imaginable, and not only urged a glass of his fine old Madeira upon Tom, but asked him to stay to supper. There was nobody to be there, he said, but his wife and daughter. Tom, all in a panic at the very thought of the two ladies, sturdily refused to stay even for the dish of tea Mr. Chillingsworth offered him. He did not know that he was destined to stay there as long as he should live. "And now," said Mr. Chillingsworth, "tell me about yourself." "I have nothing to tell, Your Honor," said Tom, "except that I was washed up out of the sea."
"Washed up out of the sea?" exclaimed Mr. Chillingsworth. "How was that?"
"Come, begin at the beginning, and tell me all." Thereupon Tom Chist did as he was bidden, beginning at the very beginning and telling everything just as Molly Abrahamson had often told it to him. As he continued, Mr. Chillingsworth's interest changed into an appearance of stronger and stronger excitement. Suddenly he jumped up out of his chair and began to walk up and down the room.
"Stop! Stop!" was saying.
"Stop! Vessel that was wrecked, and from which you were washed ashore."
"I've heard it said," said Tom Chist, "'twas the Bristol Merchant."
"I knew it! I knew it!" voice, flinging his hands up into the air.
"I felt it was so the moment you began the story. But tell me this, was there nothing found with you with a mark or a name upon it?"
"There was a kerchief," said Tom, "marked with a T and a C."
"Theodosia Chillingsworth!" cried out the merchant.
"I knew it! Heavens! As this!
Boy! Brother's son! His name was Oliver Chillingsworth, and he was my partner in business, and thou art his son."
Then he ran out into the entryway, shouting and calling for his wife and daughter to come.
So Tom Chist, or Thomas Chillingsworth, as he now was to be called, did stay to supper, after all. This is the story, and I hope you may like it. For Tom Chist became rich and great, as was to be supposed, and he married his pretty cousin Theodosia, who had been named for his own mother, drowned in the Bristol Merchant. He did not forget his friends, but had Parson Jones brought to New York to live. As to Molly and Matt Abrahamson, they both enjoyed a pension of £10 a year for as long as they lived. For now that all was well with him, Tom bore no grudge against the old fisherman for all the drubbings he had suffered. The treasure box was brought on to New York, and if Tom Chist did not get all the money there was in it, as Parson Jones had opined he would, he got at least a good big lump of it. And it is my belief that those logbooks did more to get Captain Kidd arrested in Boston town and hanged in London than anything else that was brought up against him. The Book of Pirates,